We're going to talk about disability insurance today. Before we do, though, give me a quick show of hands. Who regularly sells disability insurance? Okay. And who has ever sold a guaranteed standard issue disability case? Excellent. Lots of material to work with today. That's good. So I've been in the disability insurance business, as Bart says, for 25 years. And I was fortunate enough when I came into the business to work for a manager who insisted that I learn group LTD simultaneous to individual DI. It was, you know, if you want to be in his office, that's how it was. So I learned the differences from a very early age, if you will. And that's made it a little easier for me over the years to gravitate into this business, because guaranteed standard issue cases are complemented by LTD and vice versa. So it's not an either or. Before we get into all the details of guaranteed standard issue, I'm going to talk about a couple of other things. The fact that with guaranteed standard issue, there's minimal or no underwriting involved is not what sells it. And sometimes as insurance professionals, we forget that it's not the features, the provisions that sell our policies and our contracts and give us the business. It's not features and provisions and who has the best ONOC and who has the best cost of living in it. It's none of that. It's that consumers, like all of you, appreciate that what they're buying is important to them. And there was some talk about emotional, you know, buying and behavior. And I believe disability is absolutely that way. So whether you're selling a guaranteed standard issue case, a group LTD case to a brand new employer group who's never had it before, or you're selling, you know, a small business owner on individual disability for him and his client and his, you know, employees, talking about the relevance of disability and the need for disability is the key to making the sale, because it has to be real for people. So we're going to start talk a little bit about that. Then we're going to talk about guaranteed standard issue, what it is, how it works. I will spend a little time talking about LTD because it's relevant. So much of your business, if you decide to go in this direction, you will confront LTD and need to know a little bit about that. And then we're going to talk at the end about why. What's in it for your clients? What's in it for employees of employer groups that do guaranteed issue? And of course, what's in it for you? So without further ado, let's launch into this. This is why disability insurance is so critical. And in my 25 years, there's never been a better time to sell disability insurance than in this last year and probably for the next 4 or 5 years. Because like never before, your clients and prospects don't have a fallback position. So in the last several years, people could tout their retirement plan values. They could tout, you know, other investments, the equity in their home. They had a lot to talk about across the country. And today, pretty much across the country, we don't have that anymore. So what safety net people perceived they had is gone. And we don't live in a country anymore. I think your part of the country here is a little bit more unique this way. There are certain pockets. But for the most part, you know, if something happens to me and I lose my income and my family, because we're a dual income family, struggles, moving in with my mom is really not an option. I mean, it's not an option emotionally. Who wants to move back in with their parents? Okay. So, but you know what I'm saying. It's not even the emotional thing or the fact that we should be independent and all of that. It's really the financial. Can my mom afford to have us in her home? So in most cases, the answer is no. So we really do have to look out for ourselves. And right now, more than ever. Well, and what a gift that you could do that, but what if something had happened to you in the time? And disabilities... Right. And disabilities happen. I mean, if you look at some of these bullet points, this last one in particular is important because in this country, morbidity is changing, and mortality and morbidity are taking opposite, you know, moving in opposite directions. So mortality is increasing. People are getting disabled more often, staying out longer than they did 30 years ago. And that's because we have this great thing called medical technology. So we have a culture of doing everything we can to keep people of all ages alive in the face of conditions that once would have caused a fatality, right? But we haven't taken care of the financial side of it. We haven't done enough planning to say, okay, great. I'm going to survive the heart attack. I'm never working full time again. Or I'm going to survive the cancer. Or I'm going to survive the catastrophic car accident, whatever it is. But now what? And personally, I can't think of anything more devastating for me at this stage of my life with my children and my husband and future plans than if I had no disability and if I went out on a disability and even if I was out for the average duration of a long term, so 2.5 to 3 years. At the end of 2.5 to 3 years, even if I fully recovered, could I ever regain the financial platform I'm on now? I don't have enough time. There's not enough time, and we don't live in an economic climate anymore where you can recover quickly. So it's more, you know, more than ever before, it's critical to have the conversation with clients about where disability stands in their portfolio. And you can call it asset protection. You know, you can call it income protection. You can call it paycheck protection. You can call it whatever you want. Just call it something and get it in front of clients, even clients who've been long-term clients. And you're, you know, maybe thinking, I had someone recently come up to me and say, I'm embarrassed because I agree with you. And I'd like to go back and talk to all those people I've sold life insurance to, but I feel bad I didn't have this talk before. So how do I bridge that gap? And I said, sincerely, you go back and you say, Greg, I want to come and talk to you about disability insurance. I should have talked to you about this before. I didn't have the training I have now. And I've been to the symposium, I've learned some things, and you know what? This is important stuff, and it's a step in your plan I've missed. So can I come over and just talk to you about this? And they're your client already. Are they going to say no? Probably not. Probably not. They're going to trust you, and you're doing the right thing. I know Bart has seen this a few million times, and he actually has the six-dimensional version of these blocks. This is a great visual. Disability insurance is sold. It's not bought, so it's a push product. But absolutely, because nobody ever thinks they're going to be disabled, of course. And having visuals, I find, helps a lot. Because I've had people say to me, what do you do for a living? And I say, I'm in the disability insurance business. And they say, oh, that's part of my health insurance plan. Or, oh, I have that on my mortgage. Right? I have credit disability, right? They don't really understand the role it plays. And we don't stop and think very often. Well, we probably do. At this moment we are. But typically, people don't stop and think about their incomes and what that income is providing. No one's really worried about losing their job. They're worried about losing their paycheck. There's a big difference between those two things. And that's what disability insurance is. It's paycheck protection. And even losing one block, even a six-month residual disability or partial disability is going to squeeze people financially in a way they're not prepared for. So it's all about being prepared. It's all about having this kind of conversation with clients before you start putting features and benefits and, you know, eight different companies or whatever your strategy is, and then putting a big number in front of them. You know, talk about what it is, what it does, what it's protecting. You're not going to have to spend down your 401k any further than you already have. It's not going to get depleted between now and 65 because you didn't plan for this. 6 months of saving, or 20 years of saving 10% of your income per year is gone in 6 months. It's really simple math. Really simple math. So it's a good thing. 20 years of saving 10% per year will be gone. If you have no income for 6 months, you'll spend it all. Oh, is it on my sheet? That sheet I put in front of you, or just some, you know, it's food for thought, because as an industry, about 15 or 20 years ago, a lot of disability carriers got out of the disability business, and we made it hard for people to write disability. And so a lot of producers moved away from it. And candidly, a lot of life insurance companies quit training people about it. So if you're sitting there feeling like, gee, how come I haven't been doing this for the last 10 years? Well, that's probably why. It's a matter of having the right relationships with the right people who can help you learn how and why it's relevant. So, okay, there are two ways to get disability insurance. And we're talking about individual disability insurance right now. One way is to go through what we would consider full medical and financial underwriting, which also includes vocational, avocational underwriting. So, you know, mountain biking, race car driving, bungee jumping, hot air balloon racing, all of those kinds of things that potentially are hazardous and disabling. Full medical underwriting today at the company I represent, and I think it's pretty similar with most carriers, about 30% of the people who go in the door to buy a disability policy don't come out the way they thought they would. And typically it's because of a medical condition that is potentially disabling. So those people either get some alternative offer, they get a back exclusion on their policy, or they get rated for high blood pressure, or in some more extreme cases, they actually get declined for the coverage altogether. So the time to get people disability insurance is when? When they've already been declined and you already know they're not healthy, or before that? Before that. I'll give you a real life example. I'm uninsurable. I run mountains and I hike and I swim and I do all of these great physical things. But a few years ago, I learned that I have a bad heart valve. I've had a bad aortic valve since I was born. No one ever found it. So I'm lucky I bought my disability insurance, the three different times I bought disability insurance, and kept it all because now I can't buy any. And I'm in my prime earning years and my prime saving years, and I'm uninsurable. So it's smart, and of course I bought disability because my first manager said, you can't work here if you don't buy it. So, you know, that was terrific, right? Smart move on his part. But that's the way your clients are. You have a lot of clients who are walking around with things going on that they don't even know about, or things that are going to come on the horizon they don't even know about. So the time to get it in place is before they are worried about it. Because the minute people start getting worried about it, this whole financial and medical underwriting piece gets in the way. So that's important. And does our health, generally speaking, does our health get better as we age or worse? There you go. So, guaranteed standard issue is what GSI stands for. And GSI is not a product. It's an underwriting concept. So you can go to the top 10 disability carriers today and use that vernacular, and they'll know exactly what you're talking about. It's not unique to my company or any one company. It's what we call the practice of issuing individual disability policies without any of that personal, financial, or medical underwriting. Or avocational underwriting, which I have found, especially in the Western United States where people are outside more, we tend to be more active, we see more exclusions and limitations because of people's activities. So, good to know. There's none of that type of individualized underwriting. So those are the two ways to buy an individual disability policy. Guaranteed standard issue. We underwrite at the, how many people in here have ever sold any type of group product? Okay, so you understand the relationship between the insurance company is with the employer group sponsor, not with each participant. That's the true of guarantee issue. So we underwrite at group level. If this were, let's pretend you all work for Bart's company. So this is the Spencer Company Incorporated. And you're the employees. And candidly, this looks like a lot of companies. It's the majority are male. I mean, this looks like a lot of companies we look at. So we look at the demographic. I say, well, gee, there's a good ratio of male-female. There's a mixture of ages, probably a mixture of occupations, educational backgrounds. And so if Bart says, I want to buy a policy for all of these people, I'm not going to individually underwrite any of you. The rate you pay, the rate Bart pays on your behalf, is still a typical individual policy, but it's discounted. The difference is that underwriting piece. The difference is what was involved with the process for each of you to obtain your own individual portable policy. Because Bart sponsors it, like group insurance, I'm dealing directly with the Bart. I'm looking at a census. I'm not individually underwriting. And as a result, as an insurance company, here's why that works. The morbidity on guarantee issue cases is better than if every one of you went through underwriting. Because if every one of you went through underwriting, you're going through it saying, I am or I'm not going to use this. And people who think they're going to use it are going to buy it right now. And people who think they can wait because they're so healthy, are not going to buy it. So it changes everything drastically. So with guarantee issue cases, with most companies, you get the exact same individual contract that perhaps you've been putting clients through individual underwriting for, but you get it at a huge discount and without a process. So there's a real benefit, and it's all because it's employer-sponsored. That's where all guarantee issues with every carrier start. Yes? Yeah, we'll talk about that. I think that the trend in the industry, it used to be at a higher number and now it's gone down. So a lot of carriers are willing to look at guarantee issue cases that are between five to 10 employees in that employer-employee relationship. The rules, however, I mean, you aren't going to get, I don't think anyone's going to let you do a voluntary plan on a five-life case. That's going to have to be employer paid. And we'll talk more about what that looks like. So the employer sponsors or endorses the plan. There's an employer-employee relationship. So it can't be, Bart says, I want to do this for 10 of my employees and my sister who owns the Dairy Queen down the street. There's no employer-employee relationship. On the other hand, if Bart owned multiple companies and they were complementary to each other, you know, they did business with one another for some reason. He could carve out key people from each of those companies because he's the sole owner of all of those companies. So there are a lot of creative things that can be done. This isn't the forum to go into all of that, but it's a really neat tool to use. But again, it always starts with employer sponsorship and an employee-employee relationship. Employees are issued their own policy, and I can't say that enough. Unlike group insurance, which is owned by the employer, individual guarantee issue cases, the employer doesn't own any of it. The employer is simply sponsoring the plan and often funding the plan. Everyone owns their own policy. If we issue all of you a policy and Linda gets a better offer from an employer down the street, she can take that policy with her, keep paying the premium, and maintain that coverage on her own. So that's important. That portability piece is important. Are most of us going to go to work out of college and work for one company? No. Any idea how many, on average, college students today, how many employers they'll have over their lifetime? 47. That's right. 427. So is portability something that your clients need? Portability is huge. I mean, it's wonderful to work for a company. I work for a fine company that provides wonderful benefits. And I really appreciate, and of course, being in the business, I know the value of those benefits. So I get it. I appreciate it. But I also appreciate that the chances of me being with this employer for the next 10 or 15 years, statistically, probably not great. I hope I'm here. I might not be. Portability is important. And your clients don't think like this. They don't think like this. They don't think about their benefits and their the financial planning work that you're doing, the policies they own. They don't think in this scope unless you help them think in this scope. So it's really up to each of us to advise our clients to create their own employee benefit plan, take care of their own household, take advantage of what employers offer, but always have their own programs on the side just in case. Okay. Guaranteed standard issue, as I said earlier, is based on, it's underwritten at point of, you know, census being received. We're looking at the industry. We're looking at the stability. You know, if it's, Bart's company has seasonal employees. Well, seasonal employees are generally not a good risk for any disability insurance because they're seasonal. And when would they most likely go on claim? When they're at the end of their season. So it's very logical. You know, most of the risk selection is logical. And what you know about individual disability is true of GSI. So most GSI cases are in a white or light gray collar marketplace. It's really not designed for blue collar risks because a lot of blue collar risks, when we think about construction trades, for instance, they're seasonal occupations. They're also occupations that are, for the people actually out there, the laborers, very high risk occupation. So that's a different type of disability risk and not one that we do guarantee issue on. So typically guarantee issue cases are for that gray collar, white collar industry. Huge advantage for, yes? In many cases, they are, because there are a lot of occupations that used to be more hands-on that, for instance, today are done on a computer with very little, you know, physical interaction. So one thing about disability that's always been true, the starting point for assessing risk is beyond anything you know about someone medically. But the starting point is saying, what does that person, what do they do all day long? Are they at a desk? Are they on an airplane? Are they in a field? Are they in a field where there are caterpillars driving by them at a high speed? I mean, what's the physical hazard behind their work, number one? Number two, what kind of training and education was involved to do what they do? So it's because sometimes, for instance, in blue-collar industries, you know, you have people, I know I've accepted people into cases who are in a hazardous environment, but they're not doing specifically hazardous work. They're at supervisory level, and they're not in that hazardous environment all the time. So really understanding, you know, when you go beyond the doctors and CPAs and attorneys and the obvious white-collar professional professions, when you get into smaller business, you really do have to say, well, what does that supervisor do? What do they physically do every day? What are they in the office, out of the office? What are they touching? Are they managing people? Are they managing processes? What are they doing? And that will save you a lot of time and hassle. So within the context of those duties, gray to white collar is the answer. But some blue collar have become gray collar. And there are solutions for them. They're just not guarantee issue solutions. So I know there are some specialists in the room who sell disability insurance in various occupations. And you can buy disability for blue-collar risks. You can buy disability for physically impaired risks as well, just not in this program. So think of this as this is, you know, a specific type or method of selling disability insurance. Yes. It might be. It depends. I mean, let me go a little farther because there's some other issues that come up besides just the occupational hazard and whether or not they could be included. It's about, does the employer want to pay for them? Or if offered voluntarily, are they willing to spend their money on a benefit? Because that's the other side of risk selection, not unlike any other group program you put together for your clients, whether it's health insurance or you know, a group life plan or a long-term care plan or whatever it may be. At some point, you're going to have the conversation, who do you want to pay for? Because who's going to value it, and who do you value, and who's contributing to your company, and who's going to continue to contribute to your company, which is the kind of thinking we're seeing at an increasing rate in small to mid-sized business America. Because we can't afford to take care of everybody equally. And as companies are having to make hard choices about employees and such, they're having to make hard choices about employee benefits as well. So you know, there are a lot of dynamics that come into play. And that also becomes a carrier question, because on occasion, I've turned down a case where they wanted to include people like that. And my competition has said, we'll include them. So I lose the case. So gray areas, I mean, any gray area is worth having conversation about. This bottom bullet point is really critical, especially right now in the small business market. This is where a lot of sales are made. I would say 80% of the cases that I get involved with and that across the country my company sells are cases where we have multi-classes in the plan. Because with disability insurance, unlike most benefits, you can discriminate pretty openly. Bart is the owner, can class himself out and give himself a better plan than he gives to anybody else. And as long as the description is owner, you know, class one owners, and those of you who do group insurance, especially LTD, are familiar with classing employees out and offering different structures. We do that with these plans all the time. We take a small business that has 20 employees, and we take three or four key employees, class them in one class, and then we add a few more next in line important employees, class them as class two. So we have a decent-sized group to hit all the bonus thresholds and to get more guarantee issue, et cetera. So classed-out plans are definitely very popular and work really well. And is it, you know, by being able to class plans out, you can save money, a lot of money, and have different thresholds. Bart's the owner of the company. Maybe I want to be the owner someday. So that's another thing to shoot for. I don't get the same thing he does. When I become owner someday, I get the same benefit package. So there's nothing wrong with having a stair step or tiered approach to benefits. and it works well here. Uh-oh, user error. All right. So typically we're looking at, you know, office sales management duties, owners, executives, blue, gray collar. The income threshold is not a requirement, and that's really a geographic thing. In New York City, in Manhattan, if you're earning $75,000, you're practically at poverty level. But if you live in Provo, Utah, and you're earning $75,000, that's probably not too bad. Yeah, exactly. So when you think about income, the reason we have 75 is what we're really saying is truly most of these plans are employer, well, they're all employer sponsored. 80% of what my company does is employer paid. And who are employers willing to spend money on? Key people. Key people often typically make more. So income threshold has to do sometimes with looking at a census and trying to get an idea in your head of where's the break point. You know, where's the break point of higher wage earners, more important people versus less important people, right? So that's what the income is for. Financially stable companies are important today. A lot, as an industry, we've pulled back in many respects from some of the financial companies, commodities brokers, certain industries that just seem a little unstable right now. If we write GSI cases for them, we're more conservative than if we're writing a case for a company that's in a business that's stable, you know, not been too negatively impacted by this last 2 or 3 years. And, you know, so we're looking for stability because we don't want the policies to lapse. We don't want to write a plan and then have one of two things happen. One, the company goes out of business, they quit paying premiums, and all the policies lapse. That's not good. We also don't want people to panic about losing their jobs and go on disability claim. That's not a good thing either. So we're looking for stability. That's important. We don't always require, however, that companies have been in business in that form or under that owner for, you know, a long period of time. So I've written cases where they've been in business for less than a year because five people came from a big firm. They brought all their clients and they opened their own shop 6 months ago. They can't get group insurance and they want to get disability insurance. They have a stable base. They've been doing what they do for 20 years in the same market, and now they're bringing clients with them. That's probably an acceptable case. So you really have to think about what does stability look like, and it's very logical. I think it's very kind of practical and logical when you think about it. Okay, this is the most important part. People ask me all the time, you know, what door should I go knock on? Where do I go? Go where you have good relationships. Go back to existing clients. Think about all of the people you maybe haven't spoken to recently. They may have bought a business. They may have moved up in the company. Maybe they were an associate at a law firm and now they're a partner. There are a lot of great opportunities with people who already know you and trust you and have done business with you. Since you're going to need a census of the case, right? That's how the proposal process begins. You obtain a census of everyone's, you know, name, occupation, gender, income, location. You obtain that census. To get that census, you have to have a good relationship with people. We can't, it's not like we can, you know, play around and give you sample ideas of what rates would be on Bart's company if Bart's not willing to give me data. So relationships are critical. It's also critical because perhaps you haven't had a disability conversation and now you need to say to them, you know what? I missed a step. I should have talked to you about this a long time ago, but I'm not going to wait any longer. I'm coming over. Here's what I'm going to need to talk to you about this. And let's have a really serious conversation about making sure that we're taking care of you and your employees in the event of a disability. 401k. Is a yes. Same occupational classes. There's no difference. No difference. We still use the same issue and participation tables. The difference is with guarantee issue, the amount of benefit we're comfortable guarantee issuing is based on number of lives in the case and who's paying for it. And that's true of every carrier. So if you bring me a 5-life employer paid case, we're probably talking about something between 2,000 and 3,000 of benefit. If it's 20 lives, it might be 6,000 or 7,000 of benefit. So with lives comes, this is just a chart to kind of give you a little bit better idea of from a risk selection standpoint, what's a good risk versus a bad risk? It's very practical. If people already have a group disability plan, what I say is there isn't a group disability plan that is good enough, big enough for anybody. There's always a way to enhance any group disability plan. Even if you say yes, but they have a 60% plan to $10,000 and no one earns up to the maximum, it's still not good enough. There's still a way to supplement that plan. And I'm not a believer in replacing LTD. I'm a believer in designing something that complements the LTD for the right group of people in the case. Because LTD is a one-size-fits-all, cover-everybody program, and it's cost-effective. It makes sense for employers to have LTD if they can, as part of their design with GSI. Like any disability case, think of obtaining a proposal the way you think of underwriting an individual disability application. If you want to be successful at selling individual disability, you know how to do good cover memos. You explain to the underwriter who this person is, what your relationship is, why they're a good risk in spite of what may not look like a great risk. You negotiate and you sell your case. That's what you do when you bring a GSI case to a company or to a carrier rep. You say, here's my relationship. Here's why this is a great risk. Here's the group. Here's the census. It's complete. I've given you everything you need. Here's who I think we want to concentrate on. But if you have other ideas, tell me that too. I mean, really sell your case. Because when I take that census and I evaluate it and I come up with some ideas and thoughts and I share it with my underwriter and I say, I want a $5,000 guaranteed issue amount, and I deliver back to Greg a proposal that says all of these people can have a $5,000 GSI individual DI policy, it's done. I'm done underwriting. So if I don't get very good information, then I can't be as aggressive as I want to be with my underwriter to get you the very highest possible guarantee issue limit. Because that's when the guarantee issue amount is established. Because what follows is a simplified process. So that's very important. A detailed census should always have gender, date of birth, occupation, title, salary. If you know they have group insurance, we need that detail. If you know who tobacco users are, because we rate for tobacco use just like individual product, then we want to know that too. So we have to be very careful about that, getting complete information. Here's what you can expect. And this is just a real broad brush across all the carriers who do GSI. Something between 1,000 and 10,000. I know that's a huge range. Just know that the number of lives is what determines, ultimately, the number of lives is the key driving factor between how much guarantee issue benefit we're going to offer. And by the way, people most of the time can buy above the guarantee issue. So if I say everybody's getting 5,000 and Greg says yes, but I'd like to buy 7 and I qualify for 7, that's fine. I'm going to let Greg go through medical underwriting for the other two. If Greg gets declined for the other two, he keeps his 5. We already underwrote it. It's done. That's key. Put the guarantee issue in place. And then if they want more, let them go through underwriting for the additional amount. We can't touch the guarantee issue. Most carriers live by these guidelines. Roughly 60%, if it's all tax-free benefit between their group, their individual, anything they already own, we don't want people to be much above 60% tax-free benefit at time of claim because that means they're pretty darn close to 100% of pre-disability. And that makes us nervous. They might not come back to work. 75% if it's taxable, sometimes 80%. That kind of varies, but those are good rules of thumb. Unisex rates, and this is huge for the ladies because unisex rates, men are subsidizing the women in unisex rates. If you bought individual disability policies through a guaranteed standard issue case, you're getting unisex rates plus multi-life discounts. All carriers utilize different discount packages. So you're getting unisex plus additional discounts. For women who participate in these cases, they're getting something between 25 and 50% off what they would pay on their own on the street with no underwriting. It's a tremendous deal. It's a great thing. If your decision maker or business owner is a woman, you want to be sure and point that out. This is huge. Participation limits are all carrier limits. So it's all coverage, all sources. Most of us have a participation limit that's in that 20 to 30,000 range. There are carriers who've gone to 40. There are carriers who won't go over 15. Again, rules of thumb. So it's, let's say you have 10,000 of coverage in force on a group contract.
For the whole group.
Right.
Oh, so
well, let me.
If a company has enough employees, they
can
hit that.
No. Participation means on an individual, per individual. Per person. I don't want anyone in the group to have more than 20 to 30. And there's a hard number in there. It ranges by carrier. So at my company, I say, for instance, let's use California because California is a problem state. When I write these cases, I say I'm not exceeding a $20,000 maximum limit. Occasionally, I'll go 25. But I say 20,000 is it. So if you already have 15 of group insurance, no matter how great your case is, I'm not going to give you more than 5 of guarantee issue. Because between 15,000 of group and 5 of individual, they're at a 20,000 participation limit. Right. It's a combination of things. It's the overall limit. Whether people are there yet or not doesn't matter. That they could potentially earn up to a point where they have 15 of group and 5 of individual, in my example.
So this is in terms of monthly benefit.
This is monthly benefit.
Annual benefit.
Oh,
right. So this is on a monthly basis.
The line above says up to $10,000
monthly benefit. Unrelated. No, participation unrelated. I mean, it's monthly benefit. Maximum, but it's at case level, maximum limit anybody within that group could get. And all DI carriers have participation limits.
I understand why they would have that.
Right.
Because the $30,000 a month for an individual is very high income.
Yeah, very high. Discounts range from 15 to 35%. Again, that's based on number, typically based on the number of lives in a case, whether it's employer paid or voluntary, every carrier has its own set of guidelines. So 15 is typically the starting point for discounts. Companies who are in the marketplace actively engaging in guarantee issue cases, there's more than this, but here I would say what are the top companies I compete against. Myself, MetLife, Principal, Standard, MassMutual, Guardian, Unum, these are all fine companies who do guarantee issue disability. Now, whether they want your case or not is another story, but they're all in the guarantee issue business, and we all have top drawer individual DI contracts. I understand also Mutual of Omaha has jumped on that bandwagon very recently. So there you go. All right. Typically you're going, because keep in mind, this is typically a white collar, key person, executive professional type program. So most of the time, people are focused on purchasing or owning or selling non-cancelable guaranteed renewable contracts. Recently, a lot of carriers have started focusing more on their guaranteed renewable contracts. They're less expensive. They're stable. That's a sidebar conversation to have. So you have access to both types. You have access to non-can guaranteed renewable where the rates can never change, the coverage can never change. You also have access to guaranteed renewable contracts where rates could change. Will they? That's a philosophical conversation for a breakout session, a breakout in the hallway. Elimination periods, pretty typical of what you see today for individual benefit periods. It's all the same thing. I mean, that's really what I want you to know. It's the same individual contract people are going through underwriting for today, but we're giving it to them on a guaranteed standard issue basis. And we're designing their benefits structure at class level. So we could do all of the key people on a non-can contract format and put the next in line class two people on a guaranteed renewable format. So you can, not only are you clashing out, but you can play around with the benefit structures as well. Okay, what's in it for you? I say restful nights and secure clients because you're doing the right thing. If you have people, if your clients work for a living and they live on the paycheck, it needs to be protected. A 35-year-old needs disability way more than he needs life insurance. That's just the way it is. A 48-year-old or a 50-year-old who's got kids in college and kids at home and a spouse who doesn't work because he or she stays home and takes care of the family, they need disability more than they do life insurance, or at least equal to. It's a big deal. So don't be afraid to go out there and talk about it like it's a big deal. You're always getting multiple DI contracts issued with minimal underwriting. What could be better than that? If you already sell disability, great. This makes it really easy. Because one little five-life case takes less time than putting one person through the full underwriting process, getting their tax returns, getting their exams done, et cetera, and getting it done. In terms of hours of labor invested, five lives, one life. It really is that simple. Of course, like all individual contract forms, or like most individual contract forms, the commissions are very strong. And that's, again, going to vary by carrier, but somewhere in the 30 to 50%. It also depends on overrides you may have negotiated with that particular carrier. But that's kind of the first year commission range you can expect. It's a reduced commission. Why do you think? And also because there's a lot less work involved for you. Your work is getting the census and having a conversation with the client about who to include. It's not taking extensive applications. The guaranteed standard issue cases typically utilize a different individual application form that has a couple of questions on it. A couple of questions, not a 10-page application. So it's not a lot of effort in terms of just pure hard labor for you to sell a guaranteed issue case the way there is individual, and the commissions reflect that. Lots of cross-selling opportunities, obviously. If you're selling this, it's at the business owner level or at the decision maker level, so it opens the door to talk about other things, group life, LTD, their 401k, executive individual policies, buy-sell policies. I mean, you're talking at the right level of the company to develop cross-sell, so that's pretty fantastic. And of course, as with most, or if not all, individual products that I'm aware of, your commissions are vested. So if you're mostly in the group business and you've had that experience where cases have been taken over on broker of record, that can never happen with these cases. Even if you sell this on top of or next to or upside down from an LTD plan, and the LTD gets taken over on broker of record, this stays in your name. It's your case. The commissions are vested to you forever. The other broker can add lives and get comped on those new lives. He can never get comped on the work that you've done. So it's a huge advantage. And by the way, when you blend a GSI case with an LTD case, the LTD becomes stickier. It's just, not that it has to be that way, it just does. Employers buy the package, and it doesn't matter if the LTD is with a different carrier. They're buying a concept and a package from you all at one time. They tend to keep those two things together. They don't move very well. So that's important too. All right, what's your time worth? Everybody in here can read. I know that. And this is, I think, pretty compelling. Especially today, when for many of you, your businesses have become more challenging. Maybe you're working harder. You're not necessarily earning more. And especially from a health insurance standpoint, you know, as your clients are demanding more and asking more questions, that taking more time, you have to diversify. It just makes sense. Diversify your practice, create new revenue sources. Don't rely on having all your eggs in one basket. And this is a pretty efficient way to do that. This is the typical LTD plan. The higher compensated people are very often reverse discriminated against. And the thing is that the person who made the buying decision for the group probably doesn't even know. They just missed it. They just said, I want that 60% 5,000 plan that we've had for the last 10 years. They have missed the fact that 10 people in the company earn over what 5,000 covers, which is 100,000 of income. So that's the easiest way to have a discussion with a client about a GSI plan, is to say, you know what, there's a big gap. And when the senior leaders, membership owners, executives of a company don't have as much as rank and file, that's a problem. And that's a problem for the person who signed off on it. So it's a great way to open the door to have conversation about GSI. Gaps in LTD. Here's what happens when LTD, the natural response most producers have, and clients too, is let's increase the maximum on the LTD. So if 5,000 doesn't cover everybody, just get me 10,000. What happens? That additional 5,000 might have a pre-existing condition limitation attached to it because it's new coverage. That could be a problem because typically the higher wage earners in companies are also what? Older. They're older and they have health issues. It might have an evidence of insurability requirement. Like, yeah, we'll move your 5,000 max up to 10 for those top 10 people, but they have to supply evidence of insurability. When I was at Standard Insurance Company, a few years back, we did a study on our LTD block, and we discovered that 60% of our in-force LTD cases where there was an evidence of insurability requirement had never been met. So what does that mean? You had senior leadership thinking they had benefits they didn't have. And right after that study was done, we had a case out of Utah, actually, a CPA firm where a senior member went on claim, and he didn't have $15,000 of disability benefit. He had five. Because someone dropped the ball. Someone dropped the ball. So that's important. The rates increase. Every time you do that, the rates increase and other bad things happen. We're not all equal. We all know that. So it's important. It's a great way to enhance any current employee benefit plan. Like all disability that's paid for by the employer, the premiums are tax deductible. It's a necessary and ordinary business expense. Guarantee issue cases, declinations unlikely because we aren't doing that detailed underwriting. We need people to have been actively working full-time for the past 6 months. That's typically the main question we ask. Have you been actively working full-time for 6 months? And full-time typically is 30 hours a week or more.
Good question. On premiums, are they level or are they adjustable?
Level. They don't have to be level. I mean, some carriers have step rates and they might use those, but it sort of defeats the purpose. A big part of why employers do this for their employees is to lock in the premium and have it that known predictable expense. And if you put in a step-rated plan of some sort, you lose that. And in really big cases or certain plan designs, you can show where the LTD over time is actually going to cost as much or more than an individual policy. So that's important. Yes? Why do you reevaluate? And what do you mean reevaluate?
Well, 5 years, a lot of things
can change, including what the needed coverage. Here's most of the carriers, I think, that are really truly in the GSI business mitigate all of that by providing ongoing service on an annual basis. So most of us have a mechanism when we take this business on that we service it annually. We go to the producer and or the client and we say, show us what the current incomes are. We may need to increase benefit levels. And it's all guarantee issue.
Okay, so when you increase it later, you don't have to go through the whole rigmarole.
No. I mean, that's a specific carrier question. How do you manage income increases over time or terminations or new people or companies that get merged? That's a carrier by carrier question. But most of us want to have this business on the books, and therefore we service it in a way that's advantageous. Yes? Mm-hmm. That's another huge advantage. Once these cases are written, like, for instance, five lives is my minimum. So if I write a five-life case and 6 months from now three employees quit, they could take their policies with them. That's a huge advantage for them. And the two owners don't lose their coverage because it's individual, non-can guaranteed renewable coverage. If you have a group case and it's 10 lives and it's on true group LTD or 15-life true group LTD and it drops down to five lives, what happens? It's gone. So there's a lot of advantage to that individual contract form, regardless of who's paying the premium. They have all the flexibility and ownership is a good thing. And we are a culture of owning things, aren't we? Like, how many people own their home? How many people own a car? I mean, we could rent. Do you have tools? Do you own your own tools? You know, we could rent all of these things, but we like to own things. We take, and we have control. If we own our home, we can paint it, depending on our covenants, whatever color we want, right? So we like that. Lots of advantages. The same advantages to an individual of owning an individual DI policy come with a GSI case. You know, they own it. It goes with them. It supplements their LTD that they don't own. So it's important to keep that in mind. So everyone wins in a GSI case. You win, your client wins, the employees win. Obviously, everybody's family wins because we're all protecting our incomes and taking care of ourselves adequately. before Social Security is what they're talking about. Well, first of all, if you have group disability, there is a requirement of group long-term disability. If somebody's disabled, they do have to apply for Social Security or workman's comp or whatever is available to them. That's typically a requirement, and the price of admission for that lower price group insurance. If you receive benefits, and again, this is a carrier by carrier issue or contract by contract issue. If I'm receiving $5,000 a month from Standard Insurance Company on a group plan, and a year into my disability, Social Security starts paying me $3,000 per month, then what's going to happen is Standard's likely to pay me $2,000 because Social Security is paying me $3,000. Now, some companies don't coordinate dollar for dollar. Some companies say, hey, you're on the government payroll now. We're done. We'll give you a policy minimum, $50. But most carriers today, most reputable carriers today, are probably going to do a dollar for dollar offset. Now, when Social Security starts paying you at 1 year, they're going to pay you all the way back to the beginning. Because once you're approved, which is rare, but if you are approved, you're going to get paid back to the beginning. So the other question is, does your group disability contract offset, do you owe them money? Do I now owe Standard Insurance Company money? And I have seen group contracts where that is the answer. So it's really, there's so much more than, you know, meets the eye. Well, I think I would say, tongue in cheek, do you watch the news? The government has done a wonderful job managing Social Security and Medicare and all of our health and welfare programs. Social Security is, let's see, do you think you're going to have Social Security benefits? Any thinking person knows that their chance of collecting Social Security, especially if they're younger people, are slim to none. Social Security, and this is easy stuff to pull off. Here's a website I want you to write down, and you can pull some of this information from it. DisabilityCanHappen.org. DisabilityCanHappen.org. You can also go to LifeHappens.org. Is it LifeHappens.org? Yeah. Excellent, excellent, excellent industry-supported third-party information, lots of updated information. Social Security is so, the definition of being disabled for Social Security is so restrictive that people who are educated and who have stable white-collar type jobs are the least likely to be eligible to collect unless the disability is so severe that it's expected to result in death in the next 12 months. So getting Social Security, you can't even apply for it until you've been disabled, totally disabled for 5 months. An employer-sponsored group disability plan typically is going to begin to pay them benefits after the 60th or 90th day of disability. I guess you could have 30, but I don't think too many have 30 anymore. They have short-term plans to plug that gap. So 6 months or longer, but a lot of employers have, you know, some type of salary continuation. They've got PTO for the first 6 months. They've got STD, you know, short-term disability benefits for the first 6 months. They've plugged that gap, and they purchase a six-month plan because it's less expensive. But the point is, Social Security, first of all, it's the only way you're probably going to collect benefits from the government for disability, and it is highly unlikely at that. So truly, if you don't take care of yourself, there isn't anyone to take care of you.